The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Thanks, Summer. You've been great. But now, as Cavani told Gonzalo O'Hara, it's time to pull that finger out. Time to give it a lick and stick it up in the air to see which way the wind is blowing ahead of the brand new Premier League season. Yup, forget all those wrong-headed predictions we made last August. This time, we're clear what's going to happen. Will it be Chelsea again? Could it be City, United? Or maybe, could it be Arsenal's year? Just messing with you. Anyway, you're so starved of football, you've little choice but to listen as off we go with a very exciting Football Weekly season preview. Well then, year nine, show one. And it's a big welcome back from your summer holds to Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
To Paul McInnes.
Good morning.
And to Jaunty Ian McCourt. Jaunty, that's official, isn't it?
It is official. Somebody directed me in, somebody pointed me in the direction of our Wikipedia page, or the pod's Wikipedia page, and I've been added to the list of contributors, but it just says Jaunty Ian McCourt. There's no sort of inverted commas or Ian in Jaunty McCourt, it's just Jaunty Ian McCourt.
So are you the only contributor that has an adjective?
I guess, I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well that's probably a work in progress. I look forward to seeing what the other's going to be. Yeah. Anyway, it's good to be back, isn't it, Paul?
Very much.
Why?
So.
Why?
Because the football starts again this weekend.
Yeah, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to, and this has only come to crystallise in my mind these last few days, I'm actually looking forward to a competitive title race. Up until this point, I kind of thought, it's just going to be Chelsea. It's just going to be a dull, grinding, winning campaign, as you would expect. But I've got it in my head now that the other three and maybe even four will fight competitively for most of the season and make it interesting.
Well, maybe you thought that last year as well.
I'm pretty sure I didn't. I'm pretty sure I thought that Mourinho, after having a bedding in season, would kick on and win.
Scott Simpson writing in saying, I just listened again to last season's opening pod. You guys predicted Everton to push for top four and Liverpool to set up a title push. It was a good listen, he says. Hey, what I'm looking forward to is hearing from listeners again. Here's Ash. Does Paul Mack have enough serotonin to get through today's show after his summer exploits? Betty cracks after 4 minutes. Paul, what's this about?
Well, I think this is probably to do with the last time I was on the pod. I was phoning in from Ibiza after having been on the RAS for four days.
Right.
And I have since been out a few times as well.
Oh, right.
But I'm hard to the core, mate. I'm going to make it till 5 minutes at least before I burst into tears.
Intriguingly, this morning you've already had your ears fringed.
Yeah. And I've had a swim.
And a swim.
And it's 9 o'clock in the morning.
Right. So, I mean, how did it go the year?
Badly.
All right. Okay.
We can come back to it later if you like. I'll give you some more details.
We're going to stringe your ears, listeners, with knowledge. So, Paul thinks there's going to be a title race, Barry. Do you think there will be two?
I do, yeah. I mean, my main hope for the season is that we do get a title race because while there were many excellent matches last season, the title race was non-existent. It was a procession. Pretty much everything was decided more or less by Christmas. And even though Chelsea didn't play particularly well from January onwards, no one was able to push them or give them a run for their money, and they ended up winning the league pretty easily. I don't think that'll happen again this year.
Why won't Chelsea win it easily this time?
Well, I suppose if you just look at it in a very logical manner, have they improved their squad? No, not really. Have other teams behind them improved their squad? Yes. On paper, certainly, they've all spent a lot of money. They've brought in players that could potentially do very well. So on the face of it, you would expect them to do better. And Chelsea possibly not to do as well again. And certainly on the evidence of what I've seen, what little I've seen from Chelsea in pre-season, and I know they're only friendlies, of course, you have to add that caveat. But they haven't looked particularly good. They've looked sluggish. They don't look ready for the start of the season. They look pretty unfit. I thought their performance at the Community Shield was pretty poor, although, you know, that seemed to be glossed over due to Jose, you know, going on with his usual nonsense afterwards and deflecting attention away from his team's shortcomings. Mm. Again, it's only the Community Shield, but they just don't look very fit.
Mm. Who do you think is the big challenger then, Ian?
It's probably got to be Arsenal, hasn't it?
Wow, really?
I mean, it should be Arsenal. They almost have everything there. They almost have the complete package to get everything right for a proper title challenge. If they just had a proper striker, like somebody on the level of Karim Benzema, then I could really fully invest in them being proper title rivals.
Do you think that Wenger will be fully investing in a Benzema or something like that in this summer transfer window?
It's hard to know. I wouldn't have thought
so. You're a journalist. You're kind of who we go to. For
yeah. I wouldn't have thought at this late stage, given that...
He bought Mesut Ozil on the last day of the transfer window.
Yeah, he did. But Benzema's injured at the moment as well. Right. And I think he's got a lot of faith in Theo Walcott playing in that central striker position.
Do you share his faith?
Well, he's the type of player who can be found with like the passes of Ozil and Cazorla and players like that. And he's got enough speed and his finishing from tight angles is quite good. He's just not bulky or strong enough, to lead the line by himself.
All right. Arsenal's year, Paul?
I don't think so, no. But I think they'll be closer and I think they will be competitive. The reason I think not is because... It's partly because of the reason Ian's talking about. Although it's still nearly a month left of this transfer window and things could yet happen. Things could yet happen for Chelsea as well, who probably haven't spent that much money net so far. But I think with Arsenal, that you can't get out of your head history, and every season there is a period of about a month where they just don't win a game. And that blows up any title hopes. Plus, I think they've got an increasingly strong spine. I think one thing was really noted in the Charity Shield, Community Shield, was how well Koscielny played. Koscielny looks like a world class centre half now, and they've got a strong spine going through the team. But I was looking at the players. If they get an injury to Cech, to Koscielny, to Sanchez, to Giroud, or to Coquelin, they don't really have.
Or to Wilshere. Let's just hope he doesn't pick up anything that might.
Cross our fingers. Yeah. Finger broken. But yeah, I think that's still the beneath the top 15 players. Do they have that cover there?
All right. Barry?
I don't have any faith in Arsenal at all. I just think they're too flaky. I'm with Roy Keane on this one. I don't agree with everything he says, but I think he has a point. When he says they're a bit too interested in how their hair looks and selfies and whatnot. But I could well be wrong, but I just, you know, and even when you see Wilshere, he's been ruled out for, you know, God knows how long now. But it's history repeating itself, isn't it? I mean, he probably wouldn't have been in their first team anyway, but I don't think they're mentally strong enough to maintain a title challenge over the course of the 8 or 10 months required.
What I would say is that I think Cech is the signing of the summer.
Really? Why? Yeah.
Well, he's undermined a rival. He's weakened a rival by getting him to Arsenal. He's going to add a lot more confidence to that defence. He's immediately going to make it a lot stronger. And he's miles better than any other option Wenger had in that position.
All right.
And it was only 10 million.
I thought Ospina did very well last season, and I don't think he was so bad that, you know, Arsenal's title hopes stood or fell on his performances. You know, there are shortcomings in other areas of the field. Obviously, Cech is a great signing, but I don't think he'll be the difference between them winning the title and not winning the title.
Aidan Forrester would like to know who you think could be the worst signing of the summer. Anyone spring to mind? Should we come back to that?
Schweinsteiger might be a worry.
Really, Schweinsteiger. Well, let's talk about Man United. Thanks for that, Ian. Because they got a midfield, didn't they?
They did get a midfield.
Yeah.
They're going to be one of the clubs, they're going to be one of the most interesting things to watch this season, I think. Man United and how it all works out for them. I think the player I'm most excited about watching is Memphis Depay and how he works out, because he just seems so explosive and so, you know, dynamic to watch. That's going to be great. But how it all fits in and whether United have enough striking resources, that should be quite quite a thing to watch.
Mm. They kick the season off for Saturday lunchtime at home to Spurs. Up front, as you say, that's one of the question marks. It's kind of in common with Chelsea, who got Diego Costa and his injury problems, and Falcao and his kind of Falcao
problems.
And Arsenal, we're suggesting they maybe don't have enough firepower. And it's the same story at United then. Who?
Well, they might get a bye in this game because Spurs are stuck in Germany, aren't they? They might not get to, to that game.
Same problem applies to Spurs, for that matter, right, with regards to strikers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was having a conversation with someone about this. It was something I'd noticed, or I didn't, thought maybe I was just being silly. And it's going to sound ridiculous, but I was picking my fantasy football team. Huh.
Let's chat about that, Mary.
Well, let's not, because it's really boring. But it just... There aren't that many very good strikers
available. Who did you plump for?
Who did I plump for? I went for Troy Deeney.
Oh, yeah.
He was my third choice, and it was sort of... I was restricted by the paltry amount of money I'd left, but he was sort of, in my opinion, the standout player.
Right, so you finished off buying with the forwards. I would start with them.
Well, I've got Troy Deeney, Wayne Rooney, and I've taken a punt on Emmanuel Adebayor, but that's only because I think he'll go to Villa, and when he, you know, once
and
he signed
win the
in...
title,
you, well, obviously, I think this could be their year, you know, for the third year in a row.
So you think he's going to go to Villa...
And play well. Well, I think he's going to go somewhere,
right,
and play well. But if he hasn't signed for anyone by Friday, then I'm going to take him out and replace him.
I don't think that sounds...
He'll start well, and then, you know...
Hmm. I tell you who does have some forwards, and I tell you who else has a bit of history on their side, who finished first, and then second, and then first, and then second, Man City. Hey?
They're a bit short on forwards as well, and they've just sold Jovetic and Dzeko.
Yeah. But I mean, they've got Raheem Sterling and Aguero.
Well, Aguero won't be playing in the first couple of games, I understand.
And Raheem Sterling ain't quite that number nine yet, neither. Anyway, I take your point.
No, but I take yours as well.
Broadly speaking, I take your point.
Right. Well,
sorry, the point I was trying to make, laboured one about the fantasy football,
is... De Bruyne as well, he can score goals. Yes. Sorry, Ben.
It drew to my attention just how few prolific goal scorers there are in the Premier League. And
it's because the defending's so good.
Maybe it is, I don't know. But I Manchester United are my pick for the title, and I'm surprised by how few people seem to agree with me. Maybe I'm just losing the plot and gone completely mad. But I did notice in the Guardian football writers' predictions yesterday that I think absolutely nobody went for Manchester United. And I think in the BBC football folk predictions, every single person went for Chelsea.
Really? Which is perhaps the safest bet. Why Man United, briefly?
I think Louis van Gaal has had a season to bed in. He's undeniably a good manager, if a little bonkers, in a very endearing way, as he showed at the end-of-season dinner. And when he gave that impromptu stand-up comedy routine, I think they've brought in some terrific players, and I'd have a certain amount of faith in him to get a good tune out of those players.
All right, well, they've got Champions League football to contend with this season, which they didn't, of course, last time around. Who would be your pick, Ian, for the title?
Oh, for the title? I think Chelsea probably just have enough, although a lot of that depends on Diego Costa's hamstrings, because Falcao and Loic Remy are not good enough.
All right. And Paul?
Well, I think Chelsea, but I'll say Man City, just because of that 2-1, 2-1 reason. I think actually the things that have been said about Vincent Kompany, for example, are just ridiculous. The guy is a top class central defender, and he will find form again.
You think?
Yeah, they missed Silva in big patches last season. They missed Aguero. Those two of them stay fit. Game changes. I think Delph and Fernandinho could be an interesting combination in the centre of the park. So, let's say City.
I did notice in my annual trawl of who were the most aggrieved set of fans in the comments section of our Premier League predictions.
Oh, yeah.
Not all of which have gone up yet, but so far it seems to have been Manchester City supporters who were very, very upset that their team was tipped to finish, I think, fourth. They were particularly outraged.
Mm.
I think Jamie Jackson got a lot of abuse for his Manchester United leanings. This is Jamie Jackson, the Nottingham Forest fan.
Right.
Anyway.
I have reservations about City.
Why, Ian?
Yeah. I'm not sure their midfield tracks back enough and it leaves their defence exposed.
Oh.
And then if you leave somebody like... I think Kompany is a good defender, but positionally he was pretty poor towards the end of last season. Mangala doesn't look worth half the 32 million they paid for him. And G. Michaelis has not made any sort of deal at the crossroads, so he's not getting any younger. That's what scupper them as title challenges for me.
That's why they bought Delph. Yeah. Right, he gets up and down the pitch. He covers loads of ground.
He certainly was pretty good at backtracking during the transfer window, wasn't he?
You guys. That was unbelievable. That was, wasn't it? I mean, it was almost like a calculated stunt. Like that guy, the guy who goes and throws money over Sepp Blatter. It's like one of those. It's just like how you're going to annoy people who are against modern football the most by one day saying I'm staying and I love being captain, and the end of the very same week going, oh, bye guys. I just offer I couldn't turn down.
Mm. It's every boy's dream, Barry.
I think everyone's lack of faith in City as genuine title contenders seems to be based just purely on the identity of their manager, who seems to have been written off as a lame duck, which is possibly unfair, but some of the decisions he made last season were less than inspiring, and it was a very lame title defence, so I suppose people are entitled to have that view. But I wouldn't write him off just yet. He's clearly a decent manager. I'm not sure he'll last the season. But yeah, we'll see.
One final tiny thing, I'd say that some of the elements of last season's performance were the same as they were under Mancini after we won the title, i.e. Kompany and Yaya Toure not nearly being as influential as they had been the season before.
Right.
And I think that, you know, it's at least partly down to the players.
Huh? But it's up to him to motivate the players, and that seems to be a lot of their problem. They just look lazy and greedy, or not hungry. I mean,
satisfied. Anyway, well, that is only the first part of this first show of a brand new season of Football Weekly. Wait till you hear what we've got in store after this.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Their designer templates let you easily create a unique and beautiful website that looks perfect on any device. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Here's a quick note from producer...
Here's a question.
Yeah.
What are you talking about with those glamorous blondes in the BT house party?
Well, you know, I'm just saying there's a tube strike on, but if you need a lift, my wheels are outside.
I have to say, I never thought I would ever be in the position where I was sitting watching the television,
seeing somebody
I actually know being presented as the embodiment of middle-aged suaveness, sophistication,
is that
and seduction.
That's
quite obviously what's going on. It's like James is the silver-tongued cavalier who could get any one of these women should he so desire. That's...
Advert that's soundtracked by one of my very few showbiz chums, Lethal Bizzle.
It's a good tune.
Fester Skank.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm surprised you... I was expecting at some point in the ad for you all to do the Fester Skank, but you didn't.
He taught you how to do that, didn't he?
He did, yes.
Yeah, okay. What I was going to say was I got a note here from producer Ben.
Yeah.
It says, Football Weekly's going on tour... By the time you hear this, we'll have done another live event in London, and then in September we'll be at the highly inappropriate venue of Manchester Cathedral as part of, again, highly inappropriately, the Manchester Football Writing Festival. And, Ian, in October we're going to be doing our biggest ever live show. That kind of depends, producer Ben, on people buying the tickets. But anyway, potentially our biggest ever live show. It's by the seaside in Brighton, Buckets and Spades Ahoy. Even though we're all serious journalists, we've somehow been booked in a Friday night slot at the Brighton Comedy Festival. With 1,500 people, Barry. 1,500 people?
What? 1,500?
No pressure.
All of them expecting Michael McIntyre and getting us. Yeah. Mm. Well, that is no pressure, then.
That's a lot.
Anyway, you can find out.
We should all start growing our fringes now so we can...
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks
sorry,
for that.
Sorry, Jimbo.
Anyway,
you just bring your blonde coterie, your harem.
It's actually the second year in a row that I've been in an advert with, you know, a coterie of attractive women.
Oh, I missed last
year. It's almost as if you know, I can't be trusted to sell things on my own. They have to just like, there's this fella, but, yeah, you know, don't look at him.
There's more than just the women who are selling that advert. It's, yeah, it's very far away from being the Jimbo show, but your cameo,
yeah,
is delightful.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
I'd
thanks.
To see you, Jimbo, but I'll
there's be, another one where I should be climbing out of a TV. It. I don't know what's happened to that one. Anyway, you can find out more details and buy your tickets for both these events at theguardian.com/membership, and we'll be announcing, it says, more dates across the country soon.
1,500 people, that's an arena tour.
It's more than Ipswich get at home games, mate.
Yeah, says the Norwich fan. Anyway, listen, that took a while. But also in part two, who wants to make a case for Liverpool or Spurs? Let's say Liverpool first off, smashing that glass ceiling and breaking into the top four this year after all the sexy work they've done over the summer. Who wants to make a case for that? Come
okay,
on.
I'll make a case. I don't quite necessarily believe it.
Right.
But I think they got more goals in them this season than they had last.
Mm.
I think Benteke, he might not play to the system, but he is quality. His strike record in the Premier League is 1-2. That's, you know, top. That's top tier. Coutinho, Sturridge when he comes back, Firmino. Mm. They've got lots of options around there now. And I think you can see that there'll probably be a consistent shape as well, which might help. I think the midfield of Milner, Henderson and Chan. Chan, I was very impressed with in the under-21s tournament. He really looks like a player. I think that will have the strength, the mobility and the technique, which might stop them from being bullied in the way they were last season and protect that defence. For me, defence, I'm just not even sure that Rodgers knows how to get a tight defensive unit because, you know, he's had a few seasons to do it and it's never happened. And they've still got Mignolet in goal. But apart from that,
Klein looks like a good signing, at least in that department.
Yeah, he is a good signing in that department. But, I mean, you know, they've had players who've played all right in that department previously.
He's a much better upgrade on Glenn Johnson.
He is better than Glenn Johnson. Mm. I'm not saying not, but, I mean, Glenn Johnson has had good games for Liverpool and still they've been...
Be interesting to see how Firmino gets on.
Mm.
I guess they're going to play him maybe in a more of a number 10 role because he's not really an out-and-out striker. I think he got about 10 or 11 goals and 30-odd appearances.
But he created more goal-scoring chances than anybody in the Bundesliga.
He does create a lot, but Liverpool create a lot of goal-scoring chances anyway. I think it was 435 last season.
Yeah,
and they just had nobody to finish them off.
But now they've got Benteke.
Yeah, and Danny Ings.
Oh, yeah, and Danny Ings as well.
It's unbelievable how many strikers they've got.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they've moved on Lambert and they might move on Barini, but they've just stopped piling. People.
They're desperate to get rid of Balotelli as well.
Mm.
Not wanted around the club at all.
What about Milner though? Eh?
I think he could be the signing of the summer potentially. I was listening to Stuart Pearce on the world's biggest sports radio station yesterday. He was on with Alan Brazil and he was on with Colin Murray, and he was. Colin Murray asked him to, you know, if I said, you know, name one player you've worked with in your time, either played with, managed, whatever, who you think is sort of underrated but worthy of attention. And Pierce, straight away, without hesitation, Milner said, you know, he's never going to be in the picture in the papers falling out of a nightclub or, you know, he's brilliant trainer, excellent player. He'd give you 7 out of 10 at least every week, every game. And I think that could be exactly what Liverpool need, you know. It'll be also be interesting to see what effect their new backroom team has because, you know, Rodgers' assistants and his coaching team were made the fall guys for what perhaps were his shortcomings last season. That may be unfair, I'm not sure, but that's certainly the impression I got.
So who's come in?
I believe it's Gary McAllister.
All right.
Who seems like a guy who knows what he's doing. Obviously, I don't know what he's like on the coaching ground. Weirdly, I seem to be the only person in the UK who didn't watch Hoffenheim's every single game last season. So I don't know much about this Firmino guy. But from what I've read from all the many, many Liverpool fans who watched Hoffenheim week in, week out last season, he seems to have everything that's required to be a good Premier League signing. So I'm looking forward to seeing him play.
We'll talk to Raphael Honigstein at our live event in London on Thursday night. Ask him his opinion.
Sean O'Driscoll is also in.
Okay.
McAllister as well.
Right. Listen, I think that's quite an interesting case you made there for Liverpool to be certainly there or thereabouts in the mixer, as it were. What about Spurs? says here, lack of strikers.
Yeah, it's not going to happen for Spurs this season unless they pick up another striker. You can't rely on Harry Kane for the entire season like that. I think his goals contributed 24 of their 63 points last season. Mm. So, and Soldado's not good. Soldado's not good enough. Adebayor probably won't be there. And
Charlie Austin has been linked with a move to Spurs quite heavily this morning. This morning being Thursday, depending on when you're listening. He's still at QPR. He's unlikely to stay there. And Spurs appear to be in the box seat when it comes to getting his signature.
Araujo is another name that's been linked with Spurs.
Right. Well. Although it would certainly change things, wouldn't they, in terms of their prospects? They have at least shored things up a little bit at the back. No?
Yeah. Trippier would be a good buy.
Because when
Walker was injured, I think they're playing Eric Dier at right back, and he's more of a centre back. So Trippier would be good cover for there. Hmm. And they've got the guy from Atletico Madrid.
Yeah,
I think as well. If Trippier is playing in a team that isn't struggling as Burnley were last season, he's a great provider and a very prolific provider of assists. The year Burnley came up, I think he had over 20 assists, pinging in crosses, which I would imagine Harry Kane would be only too happy to get on the end of and bury in the back of the net. There seems to be a sort of a general view that Kane will have a quiet season this season, and there's no reason why he should. I could see him continuing where he left off
Another thing that I heard the other day about Spurs is that they kept their pre-season tour relatively short. Ooh. And have spent a lot of time on the training ground.
Ooh.
And the idea being that Pochettino didn't feel he was able to implement his system this year, and has done so this year, and Alderweireld is part of that because he's a more mobile, technical centre half, and he's looking to build the play from the back and be, you know, have a very pressing team as he had at Saints.
Although that abbreviated pre-season tour has been then unabbreviated by their airport problems, and they've got Old Trafford early Saturday. It's going to be an interesting game there. Who could step up? Who could, from the teams that were Saints? It's a mystery to know. I mean, especially after last year, the way they made all predictions look ridiculous.
I mean, I think some of these players will cut. I mean, I'm interested to watch Tadic and Mane again this season. I think we'll probably see them come on. And then, you know, players like Jordi Clathy that he's brought into the midfield could be another kind of great impact.
Who knows?
I think the big question is over their number nine, though. And, you know, Pella had a season of two halves. Shane Long was largely played out wide. Who are they? Are they in for another striker? Again, the same problems that a lot of people are facing.
Jordi Clathy would be a good buy for them. The Dutch Xavi, he'll fit right into the side.
He'll fit into the headlines as well, won't he?
He will.
In the same way as, you know, Cleverley and probably Stokes Affoli as well. You know.
Yeah.
They're playing Affoli.
Affoli good.
Affoli good. Yeah. Ooh, look out, here come Crystal Palace, Barry.
Yeah, it's going to be another interesting season for Palace fans. Who I would imagine are beside themselves with excitement at the prospect of seeing Johan Caballé playing in their midfield. It's a great signing for Alan Pardew, who began sort of last season as an object of considerable derision at Newcastle, and finished it, you know, being carried shoulder high out of Selhurst Park, which just shows how quickly your fortunes can change in football. Will he keep it up? Who knows?
Well, they look good. You mentioned Kabai.
They've got Connor Wickham from Sunderland.
And Connor Wickham now.
Yeah, Bamford and Wickham there, which...
Do you think they step on each other's toes a little bit?
I don't know. I mean, I was never impressed with what little I saw of Bamford playing for Borough last season. Now, admittedly, he was carrying injury at the time, so it's not fair to judge him. And Wickham is just kind of an enigma, really. There is a good player there, and this move could be the making of him. But, you know, it seems like he's been knocking around for years because, you know, he was a first-team player at Ipswich, I think, when he was 15 or just turned 16. So he's still young. My concern would be that a move to London, he might have his head turned by the bright lights. I was having a conversation on Twitter with one Crystal Palace fan who was asking me how I thought he'd get on at Palace, and I said, yeah, I think he might be distracted by, you know, going disco dancing and in Croydon and whatnot, and suggested he could come and live in my spare room and I could keep an eye on him.
And has there been any company?
Well, he hasn't been in touch, but he would have to share the room with a set of golf clubs and a bike, so it's probably not going
like
to happen.
Is that like a Kevin Nolan, Andy Carroll style?
Could be, yeah.
Nurturing,
yeah. But then again, you see, I live very near the Swan in right. Stockwell, which he'd probably be sneaking out late at night to go there. And the nearest bus stop from my house to Selhurst Park is just outside Brixton Academy. So, mm-hmm. you know, he might go to a late night rave and then just go straight to the ground from right. that. So I'm not sure I could offer him the protection okay. Crystal Palace fans might necessarily want.
Have you triangulated that yet, listeners? That's where Barry lives. Get a set of compasses on a map.
Beep, 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 beep.
But well, yeah, I think this could be a great, either a career defining, well, it will be a career defining move for Wick, and it'll either, and it, that'll be it for him as a Premier League player, or he could go on to better, bigger and better things.
They're at Norwich, aren't they?
They
Palace?
Are at Norwich.
Are you concerned about that?
I will be there, yeah, and very much so. And another signing that we haven't mentioned yet, Bakary Sakho, who has been one of the best wingers in the Football League for the past two seasons straight, got him on a free. I mean, I just wonder, are they a bit imbalanced?
So you've got Bolasie on one side.
But they've got Bolasie, Punchin, Zaha and Sakho.
But specifically in terms of wide men, Sakho and Bolasie.
Yeah, but Punchin can play wide.
I suppose
well.
He can, yeah.
They've got,
of course
four,
can.
They've got four premium wide men and about four strikers. Like, they've got Glenn Murray, they've got
Dwight Gale. I think
Murray's
gone, isn't he?
Not yet.
All right, Dwight Gale. I think he's on his way.
They've got Bamford. They've got and also Wickham. But they haven't put anybody in defence.
Saka's going to be a great buy.
Saka will be a great buy.
Punchin was one of the players of the season last year.
He's
thought
a brilliant player.
Great player. Bolasie as well. So, yeah, good team.
All right.
But I wonder whether they might need to look at the other half of the side a little bit. And Spironi's out injured. And also, ooh, there is that little thing, isn't there, that second season Pardew doesn't do as well as the first.
Ah. Okay. What about Gary Monk? Is he on for another cracking season after taking Swansea their best ever points haul in the Premier League?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's just smart, isn't he? And you know, they do have a really strong squad. A lot of really good players. Andre Ayew is not just a good signing, but shows the changing clout of the... You know, he could really have gone anywhere on a free, I reckon. I mean, apart from top clubs. And he chose Swansea, which I think is quite interesting. There's still the number nine question again, but they brought Adair from Braga, who's a Portuguese international.
So Stuart James did a behind the scenes at the Swansea training ground, which really fascinating. If you
what
any
kind
listeners
of thing?
Who haven't seen it or read it, yeah, it's worth digging out. I think it was 3 weeks ago or so. But Monk's work ethic, and there was a similar piece about Eddie Howe last season, and just the work ethic of these young managers is incredible, and it's, you know, they both have. They're both married, they both have young children, and yet they seem to be putting in, you know, 16-hour days on a regular basis. And just the level of detail involved in organising training sessions, drills, all that sort of stuff. Gary Monk famously has his inflatable porta beds on the training ground so players, you know, can have a kip between sessions after their lunch and stuff. And I've never been quite convinced by Monk, but I am now after reading that. He really seems to know what he's doing.
Hmm? So you go, you have your lunch,
yeah,
and then there's, you kind of step out, and there's like a bank of.
It's like a giant kind of porta cabin sort of thing, and it's got, you just go in, and it's got like a double bed,
and you go so there for an hour.
You go in and have your
first top flight English club to offer beds for their players' use. No, that's
what could possibly go
what
wrong.
Could possibly go wrong. Anyway, do you know what? There's loads of other teams. I mean, I don't want to take up all your time, listeners, but we haven't mentioned Stoke, for example, and all their, you know, former Barcelona players wandering the streets.
Yeah, damaged Barcelona players. Yeah,
yeah. It's an interesting mix, and they were quite fun last year, weren't they? And
they're very much, you know, completely departed from the Pulis goofball era, haven't they? And they've got a coterie of former Barcelona players. They were finished well last season. They were on the up. I must say, I thought Mark Hughes was finished as a manager after his last job. I thought he wasn't up to it, but he's proved me wrong. I think they could be this year's Southampton.
Really?
Hmm. But then, you know, the thing for clubs like that, Swansea, Stoke, sort of 7th, 8th, it's the best they can hope for. Mm. You know, they're not going to do any better than that, and which is a shame, but they just don't have the resources to compete with the teams, you know, who are in that top 6.
Hmm. All right, well, a couple of other clubs who will be looking to improve on disappointing campaigns, West Ham and Everton. West Ham, their final season at Upton Park. Of course, this. Things look like being quite exciting with Slaven Bilic.
Yeah, well, it's kind of ironic. They qualified for the Europa League through the Fair Play League, and in the opening qualifying rounds, their play has been anything but fair. A raft of sendings off. Slaven Bilic has been sent to the stands three times in three games. In three games. I think it's going to be entertaining as the final season of Upton Park. Whether Slaven Bilic will be there at the end of the season remains to be seen. They've lost Enner Valencia to injury, what looks like an injury that'll keep him out for a long time. So, you know,
Payet's an excellent signing, but ideally he'd have an Andy Carroll to aim at. And, you know,
who you say Naiu is an excellent signing?
No, Dimitri Payet, who they picked up from Marseille. Right.
What's his strength? Because I've not really seen him.
Oh, he creates. He can create from wide. He can ping crosses in, all that kind of thing.
He's pacey.
I don't know. This was French football we were watching, so it's hard to tell. Yeah. Really. Yeah. Anyway, and what about Everton then?
Hmm. Yeah, you can't really see them doing much better than last season.
Oh dear, they ended up 11th. Which, to be honest, given how bad it looked for a while,
For a while people were tipping them to go down, and I think it's for the first time Roberto Martinez his credentials were being questioned. You know, everyone had him pegged as this bright young thing who was heading straight for the top, and he was linked with the Liverpool job and being mentioned as a potential Manchester United manager to the future. And it doesn't take long or doesn't take many bad results or bad performances for all that goodwill to drain away. So I think he salvaged his reputation. I'm not saying he's a bad manager. He quite clearly knows what he's doing, but I don't think he's as good as people possibly thought yet. And he's only young. He's quite inexperienced still. So I think Everton will be fine, but...
Yeah?
I think there could really be trouble. Huh? I mean, I don't think they've... I think Deulofeu is a good player. Mm. Exactly the sort of player that Martinez would buy and get good stuff from. So that's fine. But it's partly because they're missing Pienaar. He's been injured for a long time. He's not necessarily adding to, just filling in. But they haven't bought anybody at the back.
And they may lose Stones.
Yeah, and if they lose Stones, I mean, you know, not only is he really talking now their best defender, he's by far the most mobile of their centre-halves. And, you know, that is already their weak spot. One thing about him, he doesn't change the way he plays. You know, the ball comes out from the back. It's passed, you know, an indeterminate number of times around their own half. And teams have cottoned onto that, and teams have started robbing the ball from them. And when they rob the ball, they're not well provisioned. They need recovery pace, and yeah, I can see trouble.
Yeah, I think Paul's right. I think Everton are a bit too predictable. They need to change it up a bit more this season.
And fans clocked that a long time ago, and they're not happy about it, which is another problem.
Hmm. Oh dear. Well, could be teams in even more trouble when we look at arguably who might be going down at the end of this season. Right after this.
Producer Ben here, listeners, here to tell you that The Secret Footballer is back with the ultimate book to challenge conventional footballing clichés, and all Football Weekly fans can get a copy of it from the Guardian Bookshop for a very special price. All you have to do is head to the offers page at the Guardian Bookshop, that's bookshop.theguardian.com, add The Secret Footballer's Guide to the Modern Game to your basket, enter the offer code FOOTBALL at the checkout, and you'll get the book for a fiver, that's £3 off the usual price. If you want all three of The Secret Footballer's books for just £15, that's I Am The Secret Footballer, Tales From The Secret Footballer, and The Secret Footballer's Guide to the Modern Game, enter Hattrick at the checkout. That's Hattrick. The offer's valid until the end of August.
We're not talking about Europe yet, listeners, because the Continentals are still off.
Typical Continentals.
Typical Continentals.
Foreigners.
But if you wanted to get prepped on the upcoming... Well, actually, it's beyond the Bundesliga, isn't it? You've got a copy of Das Reboot, which is greatest title of a sports book ever, basically, isn't it? This is Raphael Honigstein's... Well, tell us more, Barry.
Well, I just picked this up from a pile downstairs this morning. I'm looking
There's
forward to it.
There's crates of them down
there. Yeah, thousands. Yeah. No, it's a proof copy of Raph's new book, Das Reboot, How German Football Reinvented Itself and Conquered the World.
Mm.
So I know Ian McIntosh has read it on his holidays, said yep. it was excellent,
yep.
and I'm looking forward to reading it
later. I started it last week, it's good.
Yeah.
Did you pick up one out of that mountain of...
I picked one up out of the mountain of books piled downstairs. Right.
So, yeah, and Raph's joining us this evening for our live show in London.
That's
so he
true.
Can tell us more about it.
He could sign your copy, your proof copy.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to going through it and finding all the mistakes and then gleefully pointing it out. I think I've already found one on the back cover.
Right, tell you what, if you've got a ticket to tonight's live game, a live show, you're in for a treat. Two questions then for this final part. Will the three new teams survive? That's one. And the other one is, which of these sides would you least like to be a fan of this season? Sunderland, Aston Villa, Newcastle, West Brom or Leicester?
Maybe Aston Villa.
Aston Villa? Why? Yeah.
Well, there's no Benteke, there's no Delft, there's no Cleverley, there's no Takeover. There's no hope.
Given, there's no Vlaar.
There's no Vlaar. There's very little hope for them right there. Since Benteke made his debut, Villa scored 105 goals.
Mm.
He got 42 of them.
Ooh.
Without him, they are in the doo-doo.
Last four seasons, 16th, 15th, 15th and 17th. You think it could be a bigger number than that?
Yeah. I wouldn't hold that much hope for them.
Oh dear.
It's Tim Sherwood's first full managerial season. I think we'll learn a lot about him.
I don't think he's as bad as people tried to make him out to be. I know he's got that Tactics Tim nickname. I don't think he's that bad, but I just don't think he has the resources available.
I'd be slightly concerned by the fact that he appeared to be unable to get his players up for an FA Cup final, which seems remarkable. Their performance in the FA Cup final was embarrassingly bad. They really didn't do themselves justice at all.
But they certainly got themselves up for the cup games before that.
Yeah, that's true. And then, you know, not that it really matters, but they've had unwanted headlines. Jack Grealish, teenager gets drunk on his holidays, sensation. So they got a lot of finger wagging and sanctimonious tutting there, which they could probably have done without. It will be very interesting to see how they come out after the pre-season. Will they be fit enough? What are Tim Sherwood's methods for pre-season? I could well be totally wrong, but I have this horrible feeling he might be one of those old-school types who has them running up and down a hill, carrying each other, and just running the legs off them with his old-school methods. Maybe I'm wrong. He could also have, you know, sleep pods on pitch side at the training ground.
For Jack Grealish. And
why have you got a cheeky little grin on when you say that there?
What?
You said, might well do. You looked at me with a cheeky grin. Why?
I don't know.
Jack Grealish to sleep it off after a night in the tiles.
I don't know. I'm just excited. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I'm still not sure that I would choose, were I picking a team right now to follow. Sunderland, Newcastle or West Brom ahead of
Watford
them.
Watford as well. You've got to worry about
Watford. Well, I was going to come on to the three new teams in a second or two.
So you're saying you think they'll do better than West Brom?
I don't know. I think they'll be more fun to watch perhaps than Sunderland.
Yeah.
I actually think Sunderland would be okay this season.
How old's Defoe now?
48.
Right. Danny Graham. Wickham's gone.
I see where you go with this. Stephen Fletcher.
Is he still there?
He is, at the moment.
All right. Although you've got Leicester, haven't you? Have we mentioned Leicester? Claudio Ranieri. I mean, that's an exciting appointment.
I was reading about on the Leicester Mercury.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently he's already in pre-season been switching between a back three and a back four.
Well, it's...
Within different games.
Well, tinkering has on the begun. Continent, that's to be expected. Your players should be able to deal with both...
Indeed.
I can't help but feel there's and maybe wrong, there's a certain xenophobia about the mockery that greeted his appointment. He's not an idiot.
And the can he put his head in the sand, though? No, I don't think he can. I don't think he's flexible enough.
Right. Maybe he might surprise you.
Perhaps.
Well, the big loss for Leicester this season is that they've no Esteban Cambiaso. He was the one that was really driving that side last season and driving the midfield and organising them. Without him, you'd worry for them.
All right. Newcastle and West Brom. And then we can talk about the three new teams. West Brom?
West Brom will be fine.
Newcastle?
Yeah.
It's that rumour about West Brom today about to sign Serge Gnabry on loan from Arsenal, which I think is a very interesting signing.
Yeah, I mean, once you've got Pulis there, decent organisation, they'll make the mid-table fine.
And Steve McLaren at Newcastle?
I think they'll be okay as well. I mean, it's hard to see McLaren overseeing a shambles as epic as Newcastle were engulfed by last season.
And they still managed massive to shambles at Derby last season, perhaps even greater than Newcastle's.
It wasn't that bad, was it?
They absolutely bottled, first of all, automatic and then the playoffs in spectacular fashion.
Yeah. Yes. All right, well, the three new sides, who are they? Watford, Bournemouth and Norwich. Which, if any, are going to survive?
Bournemouth.
Bournemouth?
Yeah.
All right, because Rich Parr's saying, hi Richard, he's saying, are Bournemouth the most overhyped team to be promoted in recent years?
I can see where he's coming from with that. I mean, they were.
But they have the numbers to back up this hype, don't they?
They have the numbers to, but I don't recall Burnley getting that much, the same amount of hype last season, or indeed Leicester. And Leicester scored a ton of goals, got 100 points or whatever.
They score a lot of goals, but they're also really tight at the back, or at least they were in the Championship.
Yeah, I mean, I think I totally admire everything they've done. They've got some great players and they play football the right way. Mm. They played 4-4-2 a lot in the Championship with a largely kind of creative central midfield and two wingers. I think that I can quite easily see the bubble of the romance bursting at some point.
The one thing is that the fixture list has been kind to them. They don't play a top 10 side until mid-October.
And they could get on a roll by then.
City. So they could have a really decent start to this season that could.
And if they've bought well, I'd love to see them stay up. I've just got that suspicion. I just almost think that Watford's cynical kind of like sack your manager whenever you're bottling, bring in, you know, 28, 29 year olds from across Europe with pedigree. It shouldn't work. But I've got a horrible feeling it might just.
It really shouldn't work. They've got like 10 new players, a manager who's never been in the Premier League before. That really shouldn't work.
No.
So, of the three, who do you think is going to do best, Paul?
Well, I would say Norwich because I'm a Norwich supporter. Well, I think actually.
Isn't it largely the same team that went down?
Yeah, we shouldn't have gone down. The players who were in the Premier League have improved under Alex Neil's coaching. Mm. Players like Nathan Redmond. Older, more experienced.
Right.
We improved the squad in the Championship and we've improved it again.
Okay.
I still, we're shonky at centre half and we don't have a 15 goal a season number nine. But I've never seen Cameron Jerome ever play as well as he did in the last knockings of last season where he looked like the player he should be. So
did he just find his level at that stage?
Well, sort of, but the pressure was really on and the games were really tough and he was doing a lot more. The main difference I noticed was he was doing much, much more running in the channels all the time, causing trouble for fullbacks and that was, you know, he looked previously to want to have the ball kind of like on his head, you know, turn around and not run in from.
He did a fair bit of that for Crystal Palace. If I remember correctly.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, he played in that Crystal Palace side that rocketed up the table.
Yeah.
Alex Neil. I mean, he's 33?
He's 34 now.
34,
but he's a Don. Love him.
All right.
It makes you feel so bad that his manager's sort of around your age.
Or indeed, substantially younger.
Younger than you.
Yeah, moving on.
I think a lot. Norwich's survival hopes will depend on his ability to, how good a coach he is. And all the signs are that he's an excellent coach. But I did the preview Norwich in our pre-season previews. And looking at their squad, on paper, it looks like they'll struggle. But he may well, you know. Raf's made the point here before, we're all obsessed with bringing in new talent, but what's wrong with taking the players you have and making them better. And all signs would suggest that Neil is perfectly well equipped to do that. So they might surprise us, but at the moment, I would, without a ball being kicked and not having seen them, I would say Norwich should go down.
The same players who got relegated were also the same players who stayed up for two seasons. So
yeah, and I made the point in the preview that, you know, these players have already brought Norwich down and was quickly put back in my place. People seem to blame Chris Hughton rather than the players
for that. You know, we certainly like Wes Houlihan, for example, one of our key players who was really great for us last season and has proven himself in the Premiership, just, you know, wanted to leave the club for the entirety of our relegation season. So, I don't know.
But he didn't. He's still there, no?
Yeah, he's still there, signing a new contract. He's happy. Everyone's happy. I think you can say that Bournemouth will have exactly the same advantage, but I think we've got that. I think we've got a tight squad who believe in each other and are going to try their best.
I like Wes Houlihan also because when they don't match him with mascots well at the start of the game, it was like that comedy shot.
There's massive big pictures of him in the Norwich tunnel as well. Yeah, when you walk through the Norwich tunnel, they've got the players plastered onto the walls in this sort of cross-armed, heavy-looking pose.
In which Norwich kit do they pose?
They have them in the home one, not that one.
The thing is, the third kit actually looks good on.
Does it?
I have to confess to watching a number of pre-season Norwich friendlies on hooky streams, actually legit streams from Germany, and the third kit looks nice on.
Would you buy it?
Huh?
Would you buy it?
Yeah, I might do, mate. Yeah. I might do. Put Houlihan 14 on the back.
All right.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the Premier League, it doesn't take a huge amount of staying in, does it?
Nope.
Three very, very bad teams stayed up last season. Five or six teams, very average teams, got between 40 and 50 points. So it's not inconceivable that all three promoted teams could stay up, because bad teams will stay up. And it's just a matter of being one of those that are above the thick black line.
All right. Bad teams will stay up, and you'll hear all about it here as we follow this exciting season, from the word go till the final whistle, etc. and so on. We'll also be, of course, keeping our eye on all the things our continental cousins get up to when they return to action. That won't be for a week or two, though. But Monday we'll be back with our reaction to 9/10 of the opening round. Man City are playing, is it West Brom on Monday night?
Yeah.
So that'll be good. Anyway, but thanks for joining us today, listeners, wherever you might be. Kevin in San Francisco, big shout out to you.
And if you're going to our live show in London tonight, prepare to hear the exact same thing, word for word. you shouldn't have listened to this until after that show.
Yep. Good. But in the meantime, anyway, many thanks to Barry Glendinning, to Jaunty and McCord, and Paul McInnes, and of course, big producer Ben. Have a great weekend, listeners. Bye for now.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. From the unusual to the extraordinary, your website stands out when you build it with Squarespace. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.